I'm just curious, what Portland?
Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Freedom Talk Show with Veronica. My name is Veronica Blay. Today on the show, I am joined by Mr. Melvin Foote. Sir, did I say your name correctly?
Thank you very much.
Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
You are currently the president of the CFA and the African constituency, the constituency for Africa, the CFA. Yes, sir. Can you tell me a little bit about that, your journey to that place?
Well, CFA, the Constituency for Africa, is an organization I started. I've been working on Africa my whole career. I was initially a youth volunteer in Ethiopia, Eritrea. I later worked for Africare, which is a development organization doing economic development in Africa. My job was to do outreach. So part of my outreach, I formed a network of African-American organizations that work on Africa. There was a myriad of black groups that were working on support for Africa. I decided to connect them all together, at least to get them to work together, doing economic development. Some were doing policy advocacy, free of South Africa. They were doing all kinds of things, but they wasn't doing it together. So we were bumping into each other, competing with each other for resources. And so Constituency for Africa was an attempt in the early 1990 to link all the black organizations that work on Africa together through information sharing, through networking, and through, advocacy.
Okay.
And so our mission is to educate the public about Africa, to work to improve cooperation and coordination between organizations that work on Africa. And we work to shape United States policies toward Africa to make sure the policies of the United States are fairer and work more progressively in support of our sisters and brothers in Africa.
And how has that journey been so far? What are some of the accomplishments that the CFA has accomplished?
I would say that in the case of CFA, we're a small organization.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized very early that we were not going to be able to attract the resources to really do some of the things we wanted to do that cost money.
Mm-hmm.
So CFA really built on network. It's built on the network more than it is on institutions and all. So it's a small organization. I think it's good that it's small. Mm-hmm. That we're a speedboat. We're not a battleship. We don't have the resources of these big institutions. We are small, but we can move very fast. We're very nimble. And in our time, we've been able to shape a number of U.S. policies toward Africa, including the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act trade bill. We influenced the effort of the Bush administration to address issues of HIV/AIDS in Africa that became PEPFAR. I personally wrote the paper to President Obama that became the Young African Leaders Initiative, YALI. That came from me. We got the U.S. government to respond to the genocide in Rwanda. So there's a number of things that we can say specifically. Either we had our hands on it, or we actually took the lead to make it happen. But CFA is not necessarily a leadership organization, but we influence the direction of U.S. foreign policy. And then we try to leverage partnerships between African immigrants, the whole diaspora. We're in the middle of that, and our whole thing is to try to get the diaspora to work together. So African immigrants, Afro-Latino, Afro-Caribbean, Afro-Canadians, it doesn't matter, if you're black, you should be working together. Typically, I'm born in Ghana, or I'm born in Ethiopia. You can be born wherever you're born. You can be born in the United States, but you're still an African.
Yes, sir.
It's challenging to say the least. I don't want to say that we've solved the problem. The more that you get into it, you realize that the challenge of uniting black people, getting us to work on the same page, is more than a notion. I think it's going to take a long time. So I spend a lot of my time now working with the next generation of leadership to try to get them on board, because I concluded that those of us who have a certain age, it's almost too late for us, almost too late. We're not gonna figure out, we're not gonna see the spirit to unify and cooperate And so let's push the next generation coming up and the generation that follows them, because I think this is going to take 100 years or more.
That's beautifully said, and I'm looking forward to experiencing what this next generation is going to do. Actually, I ran into you at a Ghana embassy. I didn't know who you were. I ran into you at the Ghana embassy. I kept looking. I said, I know this man, but I wasn't quite sure. Then I remembered I had met you at one of the African House in DC. There was a meeting there, and I was there, and you spoke with the ambassador. And so I said, I need to speak with him. I want to get to talk to this man to see what he's doing and the work that he's doing. I saw you right at the entrance of the embassy. I was just about to get my passport done, and when you were standing there. So I knew you were someone I needed to talk to. So thank you so much for taking the time in speaking with me today. As we continue this conversation, I want to talk to you on the issue of human rights. Can you tell me what exactly is human right? And is this something that everyone deserves, or human right is only for a particular group of people, as we are seeing currently in our world?
Well, I mean, I think when you say what are human rights? You know, to me, first of all, you have to be human. And that's the first criteria, that you have to be human.
Yes,
so
sir.
We're not talking about dogs. We're not talking about cats. We're not talking about fish. We're talking about people. So if you're human, you should have rights. Now, what should those rights be? You know, it seems to me that we all should have a right to eat. Mm-hmm. We all should have a right to water. We all should have a right to a safe environment. You know, we all should have a right as humans to the benefits of the world. Mm-hmm. And so if everybody in the world should eat, everybody should eat. It shouldn't be that the people in this part of the world should eat, this part of the world should eat. Everybody as a human should have the right of humanity. Now, that's the basis of it. So how does that jive with nationalism and country strategies and ethnicity, even within countries? You know, we as humans have messed it up completely. We thinking that human rights mean that my people eat.
You know?
Not you, just me.
Mm-hmm.
Plays out in all kinds of situations. It plays out at the national level. I hear my President Trump, really, he is talking about America first. What does that mean? That means that only Americans have a right to eat, and the people who live in South America or Africa don't have a right to eat, or China? It's flawed. You know, then you go into Africa, and, you know, the Europeans have divided these people up and made them into countries. And some of the countries are so small, you know, how can you even call it a country?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got some of these countries that are smaller than Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And they got an ambassador. Mm-hmm. They got all the trappings of, you know, the cost of running a country, and they're not even big enough mm-hmm. to be a country, you know. And so Africa was divided up and fragmented. And so we have all of these states.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get within the states, you got the tribes, you got the ethnic.
Yes.
And, you know, that has been used to, exploit people and divide people up. And if you're part of my tribe, mm-hmm. then you eat. If you're not part of my tribe, you don't eat. I mean, how do we play this thing out? So I think the whole concept of humanity must be, at some point, we as a world are going to have to take this on and redefine and reshape what it means. We tried to do it with the United Nations. We tried to do it with even institutions like the World Bank. There have been a lot of noble efforts at trying to, make this real. But I think we have a long way to go before we can say that we succeeded.
And how can we, I know how we got here, but how can we work together? Africa is so divided. We as a people are so divided. We are looking at making Africa a better continent. We are looking at increasing our wealth and becoming, you know, great. But how can we be together when we are so divided? What are some of the strategies that we can put in place in working to come together?
Well, I think a couple of things. I mean, I don't want to be completely negative, because, you know, we're fighting this stuff. You know, we're trying to make Africa unity a reality. I grew up in the time of the 60s and 70s, and Marcus Garvey talked about Africa for the Africans at home and abroad. And we were talking about Africans in Africa and Africans outside of Africa. You know, there was all these great noble efforts to unite us to Kwame Nkrumah, your man.
Yes.
He really set the tone as these countries became independent. You know, that it's not just about Ghana. It's about Africa and African people. There have been a lot of noble warriors in this fight to unite us. And I think that it's even in our own current time, you know, the Africa Union's Continental Africa Free Trade Agreement, where all of the African countries are being put together in one trading package. You know, how long have we fought for this? You know, coronavirus has certainly upset it. In progress, you can't fly anywhere, you can't go anywhere. So the concept of the Continental Free Trade Agreement is slow. It's slowed because of it. But I can say that the African Union is continuing to pursue it. I think that someday the Continental Free Trade Agreement is going to be a reality, and it's going to be a very positive thing for Africa. Now, the diaspora, you know, when you look at African people, continent. I hear there's something like 800 million to a billion people on the continent, you know. Well, there's about 800 million to a billion of us not on the continent. Mm-hmm. In the now, this diaspora for Africa are blacks who are in the United States and even here in Washington, D.C. You got blacks in London and in England. You got blacks in France. You got black Brazil. Many of us, not only are we highly educated and highly positioned, you know, I shape U.S. policy toward Africa, you know, but I feel like I'm underutilized by Africans, you know.
Yeah.
When the African countries decide that they want to get something done in the United States, what do? They hire a white lobby firm, you know, give them all of your African money to, you know, to do things that I would do even for free.
For free, you know? Yes.
Even for free, or to empower me in a way to do it. I'm not looking to exploit Africa. I'm looking to empower Africa.
Yes.
But me and say, you know, maybe he don't have the power, but yet I can, if you look at the documentation about what CFA has achieved, you would say, wow. When I look at how the Jews operate, you know, they have a group called APEC that does the same thing that I do, but for Israel. They're funded by the Israeli government.
Yes.
They have meeting facilities. They have transportation facilities. They even got airplanes to fulfill their mission, you know. But what you'll see the Africans say about CFA, oh, get your money from Coca-Cola or from Microsoft or ask the white man for some money. Well, how can I ask white people for money when my mission is to empower black people? You know, my mission is to take the power that they have and give it to black people. You know, we should have power on Africa. You know, we should be empowered to do trade. We should be empowered to negotiate business deals. I'm trying to empower African people to have that power. So why would a white business give me money to do that? You know, it doesn't make sense. So we have to figure out what our priorities are. I think Africa is going to have to figure out how does it engage the diaspora, you know?
Yes.
A lot of efforts to, you know, there's a lot of talk about it. I've been involved in efforts to form the sixth region, but you know, like they say, it's not going to be built in one day, and I think it's going to take a long time. It's going to take generations for this to transpire. So not for us to despair. I think that we have to understand that our job is to put the train on the track. It's not so we're going to get to the goal, but if we can put the train on the track and then the next generation come along and push it down the rail, maybe we would get there. But you know, you have to have some optimism about Africa. We're only a link in the chain. We're not the, you know, I mean, when I look back at what Kwame Nkrumah and what Marcus Garvey and Leon Sullivan and some of these other people have done, they've done a great deal. And even people like John Lewis and Martin Luther King and what they have done, they've done a great thing. None of us can say that we met what they did. I have no claim to that. I admire what they did. I read the books, and I'm trying to take what they did and build on it. You know, I'm not trying to, you know, to do what Kwame Nkrumah did. You know, I feel qualified, but I can take advance the agenda that Kwame Nkrumah inspired in us, and try to make something happen. I can't something to organize the diaspora to better help Africa. I can do that. Mm-hmm. And then our generation is in a better place to really foster some genuine change and make sure that African people receive the same accord that any other people in the world achieve.
Mm, well, thank you. And I must say that the CFA is doing an amazing work. And I've read a bit on you and what you are doing. And I must say, I commend you for the work that you are doing. You might not have the title of Martin Luther King or Mr. John Lewis, but you, sir, are doing incredible work also in the community. And I hope that this generation will also hold on to the wagon that you have built and push it forward little by little. It takes us longer, unfortunately. You know, you spoke of...
I think the biggest challenge for us as Black people has been, how do we deal with our ego, you know? Mm. We have the chief, having to be in charge. There's something about us, and we see it in the churches, we see it in the institutions. Yeah. And I took the approach and said, I don't have to be like that. I don't have to be the leader of anybody, really. Mm-hmm. You know, my job is to facilitate and to coordinate and just put the people in the room, you know? Put the right people in the room. And even step out of the room.
Yes.
Let them have the conversation.
Wow.
And I think that's where if there's one area that I've succeeded in, it's in that area. I don't have any problem at all talking to young people. I don't have any problem at all talking to women. You know, mm-hmm. This is about men's group. You know, we all are African, and it doesn't matter if you're a woman or you're a young person. You know, we all must be involved in this conversation about the future of African people. So I think that I understood that very young and at a very ripe age. And it has allowed me to do some things that I think that my predecessors weren't able to do because they were stuck into a certain mode and a certain time. And, you know, this whole thing about ego, you know, mm-hmm. where I get in charge. To me, that has been the real sticking point for the unification of African people. The leaders wanted to be the chief. You know, mm-hmm. we got that in Africa. We saw the chiefs in Africa. We said, oh, we want to be like the chiefs in Africa. That has been the thing that has held us back because we wouldn't allow other people to have a role.
To have a role. Yeah, and you spoke of putting people in a room and then walking out of the room. It's hard for a lot of Africans to do that because they feel like if they walk out of the room, then the issue comes on money. How are they making their money and how are they surviving? You know, it's like they are missing something. And so they have to make sure that the resources in Africa are being controlled by them. And, you know, we end up selling our lands to others and our people are hungry. Our people are struggling. And that's truly something.
Mm. You know, in Zimbabwe right now, the Zimbabwe government is in a bad financial position right now. And this is all about the land, you know. And, of course, Robert Mugabe nationalized the land, and he gave it to his supporters, really. And it kicked the white farmers off the land. Okay, you look at it, you say, okay, how did the white farmer get the land in the first place? They stole it, basically. They stole the land from Zimbabwe people. But what the current government has decided to do is to pay a tremendous amount of money, sort of a reparation to mm-hmm. these white people. Wait a minute. They stole the land. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these are the kind of issues that are flashpoints into what our challenge is going to go ahead. Here are these white people in this country don't want to pay reparations to the slaves. Mm-hmm. They don't want to pay these people that they tortured and decimated over here. They don't want to pay the reparation that were agreed upon. You know, because so the wealth must maintain in the white hands, and the black people who are here are destined to remain poor and underclass and underserved. The same thing is true in Africa. You know, how do we turn this around? I think in the coming decades, in the coming century, African people are going to have to stand up. We see the role of China now in Africa. China has been truly emerged as a have built a lot of infrastructure in Africa, which has refused to build, but at what cost? You know, is Africa giving up its sovereignty in exchange for these bridges and dams and airports that are being built by China? I think the future, I don't have the answer for it, you know, but But I do know that in the coming decades and 50s, we're going to see ourselves fighting. We have black people are going to see ourselves fighting to hold on to our own continent, to Africa, because colonialism is over. Yeah, the period of colonialism is over. But I think a new period of colonialism may well be on the horizon.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I do believe that also, that colonialism is over, but we still have that colonized mentality, and we can free ourselves from that. So even when we are given an opportunity to stand on our own, we are looking for an arm to carry us through. You know, an opportunity presents itself, build a school, and then you are calling for foreign help. Our government has the needs and everything it takes to build these infrastructures, but we are depending on other countries. And I think that slavery mentality needs to leave a lot of us, so that we can start on our own and do what needs to be done for our Africa. So on that note, I want to ask you, what advice will you give to the Black community? When I speak of the Black community, those here in the United States, those in Europe, and those in Africa, what advice will you give us all to help us come out of the slavery mentality and to break free from what controls us?
Well, you know, this is the time of the coronavirus, and of course, none of us can fly around anymore. Everybody is stuck into their house, but at the same time, it has given us an opportunity to use technology.
Yes, sir. And
talking, you're in Portland, and I'm in Washington right now, and you know, we're having this conversation via you know, Skype. And now you got Zoom, and you have all kinds of ways. I'm busier now than I've ever been. And the work is becoming much more rich. We're having a conversation now with the diaspora in Canada for the first time. We had a conference in early July. We're going to have another one in a couple of weeks, and then we're going to have a big thing in September.
I'm not showing that.
The diaspora groups in Canada and the diaspora groups in the United States that are now talking. We meet every Friday, talk about issues, talk about cooperation, how we're going to do it, and we do joint planning. You know, the Afro-Latino community have approached me. They saw what we were doing with the Canadians and said, what about the African and the Latin American countries? And so we started a conversation with the African-Latin. And for sure, within the next year or two, we're going to have a Western Hemisphere conference on Africa, and it's going to include everybody from Brazil and Uruguay, Mexico, and you know, Brazil and Canada and the United States. Not that we're in charge of one another or the United States. No, we're part of the diaspora. And how do we cooperate in the interests of Africa and of African people? So I see us having conversations and discussions today that we weren't able to have even 6 months ago.
Yes, sir. You know?
And so I see progress being made. I also see a lot of young people, and we're pioneering some of this, of taking, you know, what we did last year, we took a group of young people from Maryland, and we brought them to Washington to have a day with the embassy. We went to your embassy, the Ghana embassy, and we went to the embassy of Rwanda, we went to the embassy of Togo, and we went to the embassy of Mali. You know, all in one day. And these are all young people, about 50 of them. And it was inspiring. You know, they have all these ideas about Africa. Now you're having a chance to visit Africa via the embassy. There was a follow-up this past weekend. They had a virtual to Ghana, you know, and it went very well. So we thinking now these are all models that we're going to try to employ across the country, and really across the hemisphere, to try to get this next generation, the ones who are now in middle school and in high school, linked into Africa in a way that they never were able to link in before. Last year, Ghana, of course, had the year of return, with the diaspora to return to Ghana and think about coming home. And it was a really inspiring year for Ghana, and I thought that they made a lot of progress. Many of the other countries are now looking to do similar in Nigeria,
yes,
ECOWAS, Uganda, several others. And now they're, oh, wow, how do we foster this? Because they see potential for tourism, they see potential for investors, and they see technical assistance coming I think we are. I think we're moving in the right direction here. There's a lot of people, but I think we can use technology now in ways to educate people. Most Americans, even most American blacks, mm-hmm. are uneducated, undereducated, or miseducated about Africa.
Yes, sir.
I first went to the Peace Corps. In the Peace Corps, I was in Colorado at the time, going to school, and they wrote back and said, you've been accepted, and you're going to Ethiopia. Well, I thought Ethiopia, because of the Bible, I thought the stories in the Bible, I thought Ethiopia was in the Middle East, yes, along sir. With Bethlehem mm-hmm. and Ethiopia.
Yes, sir.
Google back then. So I went to the library, found a map, mm-hmm. and saw where Ethiopia was in the heart of Africa. Mm-hmm. I was really... And so when I went to Africa, I had no knowledge whatsoever about Africa, other than what the Zulu, what the white man had taught us. Mm-hmm. And they took that Africa was a place of jungle, wild animals, mm-hmm. People eating each other, cannibals. So when I got ready to fly to Africa, when I arrived in Ethiopia, I thought that this white man, Tarzan, would be at that airport to take us to the village.
Oh, wow. Incredible.
Nobody around me could tell me about Africa. So I'm saying that we have gone from then, when I first went to Africa, to now, where we do know a lot about Africa.
Yes, sir. In
all kinds of ways. I see a bright future for African people in the diaspora and on the continent. Mm-hmm. It's going to take a while, but no struggle, no progress. Mm-hmm. And so we're struggling, sure enough. These are hard times, but I see progress at the end of the light, and African people will survive. African people will thrive. This is the greatest continent in the world. We're the greatest people, and we're at the end of the day, African people are going to be just fine.
Thank you so much, sir, for taking the time today in speaking with me. We've done almost 30 minutes and we are going to be wrapping up here. I am so honored and so grateful. And I'm going to have you back again if you will let me, so we can have more of these conversations.
I love your spirit. I love your spirit. And I can see that your commitment is there. And so anything I can do to support you, I will. Send me a copy of this program when it. And I'll share it with my network also.
Yes, sir. You receive everything once we wrap up. I'll make sure that once it's edited, you receive every information. Thank you again for joining us today. And to our viewers and our listeners, thank you again for joining us today. We had the president of the Constituency of Africa, CFA, Mr. Melvin. Mr. Melvin, thank you again. And I hope that you have a wonderful day today. As we wrap up the program today, I'm going to talk to you a little bit more on the side of the program. And so if you can please bear with me here. And I would like to thank my viewers again for joining us on the Freedom Talk Show with Veronica. I will leave every information there is to know of Mr. Melvin under the video today and also on the Anchor podcast. Make sure you check him out and see the work that he's doing with the CFA and every incredible achievement that he has done. Thank you again and have a wonderful day.